Welcome to the Wags of SCI podcast, where we discuss life, love, and caregiving after spinal cord injury, hosted by Elena Pauly and Brooke Paget.
Both of our partners are quadriplegics, and after connecting online in 2017, we began the advocacy and support group Wags of SCI, which is an acronym for Wives and Girlfriends of Spinal Cord Injury.
We know firsthand the challenges that come with living this lifestyle, and our mission is to spread education, awareness, and positivity from our unique perspectives.
Join us each week as we tackle deep discussions around balancing life as a caregiver and a lover to someone with a spinal cord injury.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Wags of SCI podcast. Here we go. Hello, Wags fam, and welcome back to the Wags of SCI podcast. That's Wives and Girlfriends of Spinal Cord Injury podcast with your hosts, Elena Pauly from Vancouver today and Brooke Paget from Southern Italy.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Today's podcast is super juicy and will fill your brain with a lot of things that you probably didn't know. But first, before we get into that, we want to send a big shout out to this episode's sponsors, Robin Wishart of Wishart Brain and Spine Law. Robin has been our legal advocate for the past over 3 years now. She's worked on our personal cases, as well as behind the scenes as a legal advocate for the Wags of SCI community. Robin specializes in brain and spine injuries, and her firm, Wishart Brain and Spine Law, and team works all over North America with their networks in order to help people just like you with things like insurance benefits paperwork, finding resources in your area, looking through your paperwork to make sure you're getting the most out of your plans, and any real help with your partner's injury or any way that you need help as a caregiver. So if you need any assistance at all with anything legal, Robin knows everything there is to know about the legal ins and outs of spinal cord injury. So visit her website, brainandspinelaw.com, and tell her the Wags of SCI sent you. Our next sponsor is Rolling in Paradise. Rolling in Paradise is an adaptive equipment company that is owned by Annalisa and John Squires. And the great thing about Annalisa and John is not only are they friends to the Wags of SCI community and provide a great deal of insight and assistance to this community, but Annalisa is a quad wife and John is a quadriplegic, and they run this adapted equipment company from Florida. They ship all over North America. They are VA approved and they know what it's like to be injured and need help with your equipment. So if you need anything from a sport bike to any sort of assistant wheelchair device or even equipment like Hoyer lifts, please contact Annalisa and John, support your local Wag of SCI owned business, and tell them that the Wag sent you. So you can visit rollingparadise.com to learn more about this amazing couple and how they help the community. So let's talk about today's podcast. This is going to be, I would say, kind of triggering for a lot of people, but we're going to do it anyways because we like to talk about things that scare people and concern people and maybe taboo topics in the community. And this podcast is going to be about something that is extremely relevant to, I would say, probably every SCI couple and certainly every person that has sustained an SCI in their lifetime. And that is the medication gabapentin.
Now, this topic was actually brought to us by another member of our community, another Wag of SCI, right? So this was a great thought on her part because, like you said, Brooke, every single person that we know of that leaves rehab goes home on this medication.
Well, and we were just so inspired by her post because her post, like, and obviously we'll keep all of this anonymous, but we were really inspired by it because she was just asking for some observations about the people's partners after they started doing having gabapentin or were prescribed gabapentin and what their life was like and their results were like. And so the comments blew up.
Right. The comments blew up, but we also wanted to do some digging ourselves, which is what you and I do a lot of. So,
well, the good thing that, and I'm the reason we're really, really happy it came up is because, like I said in the comments, it's cool to see that women are starting to wake up from our perspective since running the group since 2017. We are natural health advocates. We're not against pharmaceuticals. They, you know, they help so many people in this community. But we are more kind of like the type of women that are, you know, if it's absolutely necessary, if it's a life or death situation, or if it's a bacteria and you have to use a pharmaceutical, then they're great. But we don't like to base our lives around them, and we don't like to solve our health issues with them if we can possibly avoid them. So we kind of wanted to give that disclaimer at the start of the podcast. We are just going to be relaying some of the information from our own firsthand experiences, and then also those of some of the comments we got today and our observations as leaders of this group, what we've seen over the years and why it's important to you and why people need to start paying attention to what is going into their bodies. Because like you said, Elena, this is one of the medications that is prescribed to every single SCI patient when they get injured. And a lot of the times it's without consent.
Right. And that, there you go. There's a big one. So when you are laying in your hospital bed in ICU and you are unable to, I mean, some individuals are in an induced coma or in a coma or unresponsive or unable to speak because they just had a traumatic injury, that a lot of these drugs become, they just are administered to you. And that's a whole other podcast that we can speak on and on another day. But then when you leave rehab, you get sent home with a very long prescription list of medications. And some of the comments, like you said, that blew up, really, I found it extremely interesting, very fascinating that there is a running narrative between all the comments and the side effects that these women are coming forward, explaining and sharing with one another are quite concerning. They're quite scary. And I mean, both of our partners were sent home on gabapentin, and it's, you know, what I find more interesting is that they're able to live their life now without it. And one could argue perhaps a healthier life without it, a life where they're actually able to continue, you know, on with a new career path, being able to get out of bed, being able to be more themselves instead of being completely sedated and out of it.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to state a couple of truths right off the start, like right off the bat, before we get into what it is and what its mechanism of action is for people that don't know. Pharmaceuticals, especially pain medications, they're not there to heal your body. They're there to act as a band-aid and as support while you're going through something, while you're in pain, or if you have a chronic condition that needs to be managed chemically and you cannot manage it yourself, or your body cannot manage it itself. And so I think that's really important to state right at the start, because a lot of people still think that drugs and drug interventions are actually curing the disease at hand, or the issue at hand, or the pain at hand, when that's actually not what they're there for at all. They're there to chemically manage the symptoms of whatever you're going through, right? So, I mean, sometimes, like we said earlier, they're definitely necessary. But most often, a lot of these medications can be a good bridge, right? Let's just say, you know, your partner is in a lot of pain. This is the first line of pain medication that the doctor will prescribe to him, because it's not an opioid, right? And, you know, opioids are overprescribed, so their doctors are trying to steer away from that. And it does manage nerve pain. But that being said, that bridge, you know, you should take it while you're trying to figure out the source of the pain or trying to manage the pain in a different way. However, what normally happens is, because the body gets reliant on these pain medications, usually you're trying so hard to manage the pain that you end up staying on the gabapentin, or you're staying on the painkillers and then increasing the dose over time because the body gets used to it, right? And then you have dependency. And this is one of the hugest problems in our SCI community, is there is so much pharmaceutical dependency that some of these people don't even know if they need these drugs or not. They're just so reliant on them, and they can't get off them because they're dependent on them. And so this is where I think education is so important in this community, because so many people don't even think about what they're doing. They take their doctor's advice, they go home with a prescription, and they don't even know why they're taking it. And so I think let's start off by talking about what exactly gabapentin is. So we're going to use a Wikipedia page to be as general as possible when we're describing the what it is, the medical uses, and, you know, why people with SCI go on it.
Mm-hmm. And before you do that, though, everybody knows, don't use Wikipedia for anything, right? Because anybody can go online and edit Wikipedia. It's something that we've all learned through our education that it will not be accepted by any professor for any sort of research paper. So we're for the sake of transparency of what we're doing here, it is the most, I want to say, mainstream, anybody can understand Wikipedia. So yes. Therefore, this is why we're using it.
And they do have moderators that work there that quote fact check these things, and you have to cite these things. So Wikipedia is great for getting your citations, not great for copying what they say. However, you're totally right. It's they make it easy to understand for people like us who are not scientists or doctors. So I think it's really interesting that gabapentin was originally invented for seizures and epilepsy patients, which is very interesting. But now what it's used for is neuropathic pain caused by, obviously, central nervous system disorders like spinal cord injuries and diabetic neuropathy. So it's huge. And the thing that is interesting to me is we have, both Elaine and I have personal stories about how we have been affected by these medications. And so I think it's interesting because we actually looked into these things when it affected us, and we were just kind of like questioning what was going on around us, like we normally do. But this was, for me, this was almost 9 years ago now. And I remember my husband was in the spinal cord step down. He'd been in the hospital for about 3.5 weeks. And he called his doctor and he said, "Listen, I have these weird side effects. My memory is all foggy. I have the worst dry throat and dry mouth I've ever had. I don't feel like myself. What is causing this?" And his pain doctor basically said, "It is the gabapentin. It's the side effects of the gabapentin." Evan said, "Okay, what is gabapentin and why am I on it?" And we were both very concerned because even before Evan's accident, we were natural health advocates. And so he was kind of like, why was I not consulted? But not only myself, even when I was out of it, why was my partner not consulted? Why was my mother-in-law not consulted? They were here every day. They weren't asked. They were just put on it without my knowledge. And so his doctor said, "Well, it's part of a cocktail that we give everybody who sustained a spinal cord injury that comes into the hospital. And what it does is it manages any potential nerve pain that may arise from your condition." And Evan said, "Well, how do I know if I have any nerve pain if I am being given something that medicates it?" And he's like, "Well, you wouldn't. It just makes your life easier in the hospital." And so Evan said, "Okay, well, if I want to get off it, is that okay?" And he's like, "Of course, you can get off it right now if you want." And Evan's like, "Okay, I'll get off it now then." And so he said, "Okay, great.
Yeah, bye. See
you later." And this pain doctor who's in a wheelchair himself, right? So he knew exactly what it was and what it did and why. And so we took him off right away. He didn't taper him off at all, which is very interesting because I know most medications you have to be tapered off, but he didn't taper it off at all. And then this is the best part of the story. He looked at Evan and he said, "To be honest, we don't normally give this medication to the patient for the patient. We give this medication and the cocktail associated with this medication for spasms to make it easier on the nurses and the caregivers." And so right then and there, it was a huge red flag for Evan because he was like, "Okay, so you're telling me that if I hadn't have asked, I would have been sent home with a prescription for this and I wouldn't have really known why I was taking it or what it was for, but it wasn't even really for me. It was more for my caregivers." And he said, "Yeah, pretty much," which was very interesting because you don't normally hear doctors talking like this. I think it was a special circumstance because he was in a wheelchair himself. But that's, you know, there's a bigger point to all of this. And the point of the story is a lot of our partners get put on these drugs without even knowing if they need them and form dependencies before they even get a chance to decide if they want to be on it or not. Not just that, they don't get exposed to the risks associated with this kind of medication, which is also extremely important. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this story that you share is one of so many. This is not a one-off conversation between a patient and the physician. As we've discussed earlier, we will in a little bit read some of the comments from the women in our community, but it's a very common thing, and it was very similar to what Dan and I experienced in rehab. You know, I remember even the day that he was feeling really optimistic and he was feeling really great and he was trying to self-cath himself. And he came in, I guess, one of the rehab assistants was teaching him how to do a catheter on himself. And a nurse walked in and she started yelling and screaming at him. And he was just like, oh my God, what's going on here? And she was like, how dare you try to do this catheterization yourself? You need to get a suprapubic catheter because you're going to be a burden on your family and your caregivers. Why would you ever, like, why are you trying to get this independence for yourself? You're just going to make more work for everybody else. And right there is exactly what you're speaking about, the medication, so that the patient with a spinal cord injury, instead of improving, instead of trying to really reach for something more tangible in their recovery, why would you not, you know, how dare you? Why are you going to be more of a burden on everybody else? Just take this medication, just be a zombie, just go lie in bed all day. Because that's truly how society and our government values people with disabilities regardless. So
yeah,
it's not a one-off, friends. This is quite common in the community.
Yeah. And it's, you know, sometimes people say to us that, you know, we're doomsday thinkers, but you know, it's not that. It's just we're very well versed in the reality of many, many different sides of the systems when it comes to disability, when it comes to medication, when it comes to caregiving, human rights. We've seen a lot in these years since we started WAGS, and also as young women who have been kind of fierce their whole lives and always questioning things. We both have that type of personality. So when we talk about like the reality of the situation, we always like to think of ourselves as a number, whether it comes to dealing with hospitals or insurance. These doctors, they get into medicine because they do want to help people, right? Same with nurses. But then something happens along the way. We've seen it so often. We've heard so many testimonies of this where it's just like you become too busy. You get burnt out. You're worn out. The system doesn't allow you to have proper time to spend with your patients. I believe it's eight. Doctors get paid for 8 minutes max each doctor's visit here in Canada. And that's a proven statistic. They just don't have the time to spend with patients where they can actually try and help them. And so they use whatever resources they can quickly. And a lot of the times it's these pharmaceuticals that will help band-aid the situation and help to give relief to that patient. Short term, long term, it's not really, you know, it's kind of an experiment, right? But this is why we speak the way that we do to anyone. Maybe you're new to listening to us, is just we like to kind of be, I guess you would call us, quote, based, where it's just like we like to face reality head on and take our feelings out of it and just kind of say, okay, what is the issue at hand? You know, these doctors do not have time to baby our partners through the process of what medication will work for you and how will this help you in the long run. It's just, it's not part of the medical system, right? So that's where I think the private group is really great and WAGS of SCI are really great because they're investigators, right? A lot of us really, really, really care about our partner's health. And so we like to do all this kind of heavy lifting research and FBI investigation into what exactly our partners are putting in their bodies and why. And so sometimes we get disillusioned by the system, right? The system's at hand after we do that much research and looking into this because, you know, it's not roses and sunshine. It's just not. And the sooner I find the sooner that you come to terms with that, the better an advocate you can be for yourself and your partner. Do you agree?
Here's the thing about that, what you're saying, and this is, again, just from personal experience, and I think a very reoccurring theme in our community. I don't believe physicians are evil people in any way. They save lives. They put in a lot of effort, a lot of work into the schooling that they do, the effort that they do. They sacrifice their time with their families. They sacrifice their time for themselves. They are truly pillars of the society. I do believe this. There's no doubt in my mind. I do also believe what you're saying is that it is very difficult to get to know a patient over long term, especially when you're taking over somebody's practice. And they become a new patient. Spinal cord injury, there are a lot of very, very missing pieces to spinal cord injury.
Yeah.
And how to treat it.
And they know less about spinal cords than they do about the brain. Did you know that?
Right. And it is all a huge mystery. I think that a lot of the time, from personal experience, once again, you're shooting in the dark. The physicians that we've come into terms with, the physiatrists even physiatrists that we've had encounters with, even the specialists that are there, part of the iCord system, which is the research facility here in Vancouver, British Columbia, for spinal cord injury, they don't know. There are a lot of things they don't know. And when you end up having very serious issues with pain, with discomfort that is so unmanageable that you end up going to emergency, and you end up going home with no answers, in that short period of time of visitation, that physician is going to look at you and go through what they know, which is medication, and try to pick the first thing that they can sort of textbook categorize to the symptoms that you are displaying. Those are the truths. You will be sent home with a quick fix because they just don't know. There are not really that many other options. And, you know, a lot of what we're trying to say here with these medications is that there are also a lot of side effects. There is like a black box label on this medication of dependency, of addiction, of, let me see, the comments here say, my partner was completely confused. My partner completely lost their mind. He wasn't able to think. He was very slow. He slept a lot. So these are the kind of side effects that you're getting with this kind of medication. They are serious. This is very serious.
You know, what's interesting too, is that in the comments, a lot of the women were talking about how their doctor did not go over the side effects with them.
Because there's not enough time also, right? And a lot of the time when you do go to fill a prescription at a pharmacy, one of the first things that a pharmacist will do is hand you a pamphlet or a booklet. They'll look at you and say, have you taken this medication before? And they will hand you some reading material for you to take home with you with your medication. And I truly believe it is all because of a time constraint. There are less physicians to the number of patients that are now seeking support and healthcare.
I definitely 100,000,000%. It's crazy how little time you have. And, you know, that's just the system, right? That's how it's set up. It's like, boom, boom, boom. But like, also there's also, they're educated in a certain way. So it's like, you can't really fault these doctors because, I mean, you can, but you can't. Like, you can't really blame them. They've been educated in a certain way with a certain curriculum. And I believe there was a study that came out, I think it was British Health Journal or something like that, that talked about how scientifically Western medicine is about 50 years behind the latest developments in health and neuroplasticity and all that stuff that's coming down the pipeline, which is interesting because you think about what doctors are trained in and their training and their, you know, however they've been trained in their residency 10, 20 years ago, add 50 years to that. And it's just like, you can't really fault them. Like, they've been trained in an old fashioned way. They may not be up to date on the latest ways of doing things. They may not care about prevention. It's not in their book of tricks, like you said, right? So it's like, you know, there's so many restrictions. They're working with their set of tools, which is extremely important in times when you do need that set of tools. But when you're looking for long-term solutions, it's you got to be a critical thinker yourself. You got to be your own best advocate when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, there is, I mean, I don't know. I have a physician in our family. I very highly respect that these people are. They, like I said, they sacrifice a lot. But what I've noticed over the years, what ends up happening, and we talk about this a lot, is that after your partner sustains a spinal cord injury and your friends and family, they show up for the nice lunches, the nice dinners, and then they go home, you end up being there with your partner. You witness the night sweats, the spasms, the limbs falling out of the bed, the, I don't know, literally just awake all night long with your partner who's in pain. You are the one who is there. And I always sort of say to Dan, I feel like I'm feeling the ripple effects of what he's feeling, and vice versa, right? We're humans, we're connected to one another energetically and in all sorts of other ways. That how could you not feel what your partner is going through? So then what ends up happening is, and I try to do this with as much love as possible, but what ends up happening is you get extremely frustrated and you feel defeated. And like Brooke said, you are just a number, you know, take a number, have a seat. We'll call your name when your number's up. That's what it feels like a lot of the time. And then you sort of go between stages of hopelessness of, if I go to the hospital, I'm going to get no answers. If I stay home, I'm in pain. If I go to the hospital, will they just throw another prescription pill at me? So we do have, the good news is it's not all bad. You end up becoming your own advocate and you end up spending a lot of time sitting, reading, researching, getting the opinions of other women from the WAGS of SCI private discussion group, because these are the women that are also putting in hours and hours and hours and daily living and weeks and months and years into trying to solve these mysteries that are what is a spinal cord injury alongside their partners. And that really just comes from a place of caring and love. It's sort of how we say that when you care, you give the best care, right, to your partner. It's very different to be in the field because you've read something from a textbook than to have applied lived experience, which you are experiencing every single day. So you do become your own advocate. You become your own expert in all sorts of ways.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Really well put. So when we were talking about gabapentin and, you know, the mechanisms of how it works and how it works on the nervous system, you can find out all that information for yourself. And this is what we always encourage people to do when they're interested in further information, is to go down the rabbit hole yourself. So I would say a really good place to start for a newbie is the Wikipedia page of gabapentin. It shows you what it does. It shows you the side effects. It shows you what when it was approved, the medicinal uses, how it works on pain. I think it's really important to familiarize yourself with that. And then also scroll down where it tells you what the black box warning is. It tells you about the side effects, the risk of suicide, respiratory depression, withdrawal, and dependence, as well as overdose. So if you head to the Wikipedia page and look at that, you can really familiarize yourself with what it actually is and what it does. And you know, the more knowledge, the more power you have. From there, I think it's really important to find a reliable source and do some searching, maybe in an uncensored search engine, like what are some uncensored? Brave search engine is uncensored. Google is censored. You can find a lot more information that might have been categorized way further down the line than different pages. So you can find more information that way. So go and search gabapentin, what it does, all that stuff, and do the research yourself, because we can't tell you exactly everything that it does. We are not scientists. We are not doctors. We are just women who care about our partners. Right? So we always like to encourage that critical thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Critically think about everything. That's the purpose of life. But also don't wait until you're the guinea pig for another trial medication or another trial procedure or another human trial stem cell or brain invasive surgery for healing this or that. Like, there's a lot of stuff out there and it can become extremely, it's very, very saturated with hope right? It plays on people's fears. It plays on your desperation. And I think that's been the biggest learning piece here for me while running Wags of SCI, is seeing the different sort of resources people dive into with just so much. I mean, we've experienced it ourselves with so much desperation and hope for betterness, for healing, for dependency on Western invasive operations or medications or procedures or whatnot. I mean, we definitely always say that you have the power to heal yourself. And it might sound really ridiculous because that's not what our world is set up for. Our world isn't set up for that. It's not set up for us to take back our power. So here we are trying to encourage you to take back your power before somebody else makes up your mind for you.
For sure. And we always say this, knowledge is power. The more you know, the more you know, the more you know. And it is really important. It can be very overwhelming at first, but trust me when I say the overwhelm fades and it turns into just a lot more curiosity after a while. I think, you know, before we move on to reading some of the comments about some WAGs experiences with gabapentin and observing their partners, I know for myself personally, if I were listening to this podcast, I would want to know some more information on the side effects that I wasn't told. And now we're going to get these off Wikipedia because they've been cited properly, and it just puts them into a generalized sense. So it's easy for me to see, and it would be easier for you to see. You can also click on all the footnotes. They have them all cited here. So I think it's important to know the side effects. And the reason I say that is because so many women are with their partners who are on gabapentin, and they may not be aware of what to watch out for. Because I know that, you know, this injury, there's a lot of stuff that can happen that you blame it on the injury. You think it's because of lack of sleep, or you think it's because of something to do with the spinal cord injury, but that may not be the case. And while we're not trying to make you afraid, I think it's really important for everybody out there to be aware of what of some of the common serious side effects are, so that in case something is happening, you can kind of be like, okay, this might be this, right? I would want to know that.
And what you said earlier, we both do, and I think everybody we know does at one point or another have some sort of experience with taking a pharmaceutical that they did not necessarily think agreed with them. And that needs to be said, right? Everybody is different. Every body is completely different. Everybody's brain is different. Your reactions to medications are different. So just want to put that out there that this is not a one-off again. This is something that I think almost everybody can relate to in their own way with their own personal experience of whatever that was.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so let's see here before we get to the comments. So side effects. Dizziness is the most frequent side effect. Fatigue, ataxia. My grandma had ataxia. It's basically like a nervous system disorder where you have trouble going out in public and you're just very anxious all the time, and it reflects in your body. Another one is peripheral edema, swelling of the extremities, which I found that interesting because that is a big side effect of SCI. So is dizziness, so is fatigue, so is ataxia. Like all these side effects can be mistaken as SCI side effects, which I thought is very interesting. It also says gabapentin is associated with weight gain of 2.2 kilograms after 1.5 months of use, which I thought was very interesting as well. So case studies indicate that it may cause erectile dysfunction. Also very interesting. Then also they get into the rare but serious side effects, which is anaphylaxis, respiratory depression, and increased suicidal behavior. So what I found extremely interesting about this is it says increased suicidal behavior. It says it's rare, but could happen. Then on the next paragraph, it goes into the next paragraph is suicide, right? So it says here the gabapentin label contains a warning of an increased risk of suicidal thoughts and behaviors. According to an insurance claims database study, which they cite here, gabapentin use is associated with about a 40% increased risk of suicide, suicide attempt, and violent death, as compared to another anticonvulsant drug, topiramate. So there's a couple of studies cited in here about the rate of suicide attempts and self-harm. Those who are taking it for epilepsy or for neuropathic pain. I'm sure there's lots of variables, but the fact that they're mentioning this and the black box warning is very serious in my opinion, because again, tying this back to SCI, there is a lot of men that are partners to our WAGs who have suicidal thoughts and who don't want to live anymore and, you know, who are just depressed, right? And so who's to say that medications aren't contributing to this, right? That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And this is not made up. Again, this is not something that we've just sat down and scribbled down. This is something that is there for the public to read, to research, to know. Yeah. This is your knowledge.
It also says here respiratory depression is very common with it's breathing suppression. Then it says it is potentially fatal. I just find it interesting that they give this drug to people that already have compromised lung function. In many cases. And then they talk about withdrawal and dependency and the symptoms of withdrawal. And then they talk about overdose, which it says through excessive ingestion, accidental or otherwise, persons may experience overdose symptoms, including drowsiness, sedation, blurred vision, slurred speech, uncontrollable jerking motions, and anxiety. Okay, so those overdose symptoms are a lot of what the women were describing in the post. Which is also very interesting.
Well, I think the withdrawals is really, really crazy. Basically, so here's one. I'm just going to read a comment. Careful, my husband didn't like how drowsy it made him, so he only took it at night. But when an intense pain period arose, he'd go back to full dose. Wrong move. Over a couple days, he would get more talkative, anxious, then angry, sometimes hallucinating on the front porch. Prior to SCI, just broken and complicated back issues then. He was paranoid, but wouldn't be honest with his doctor. Eventually, I took enough notes to consult with a friend who ID'd these episodes as related to the gabapentin. I started leaving messages for his doctors. Info out so it would violate patients' confidentiality. So information out of the doctor about the doctor. He felt a lot during these episodes. Completely broke a toilet. Put his head through one wall and shoulder through another. No remorse or connection. All of that created further back, neck. And neck issues still prior to the SCI. So if something is off, talk to his doctor. So this patient experienced anxiousness, anger, broke a toilet, put his shoulder head through a wall, had hallucinations, paranoid. I mean,
there's some crazy stories on here, like just looking, and you know, people can may be thinking right now, oh, they're just picking the craziest ones. I would say that there's about 5% of comments out of 60 something that are in favor of this drug. And the rest of them are, these stories are like horror stories. Here's one that's kind of like, oh, sorry, mm-hmm. What were you saying?
No, go ahead. I mean, yeah, the pages, I don't know how many comments there are on here, over 60 comments.
Yeah.
So we'll, I mean, we only have such a period of time here, but we'll try to read just very randomly selecting these.
My husband was on it from somewhere around the accident to about 7 months ago. We talked to the doctor and he had him wean off of it. He was having trouble this last year with his memory and finding words. It wasn't easy, but after about a month, he was good and with a new mentality. He does have some nerve pain, but he would rather have that pain than feel the way that he was feeling. So I would say he was on it for about 4.5 years. Wow. Here's another one that says, Craig Rehab had him on it. He started in ICU, but at one point an emergency had us move to a Swedish hospital where they, quote, didn't believe the dose could be so high, end quote. So they simply refused to administer it at all. And after those days surviving that emergency, he just said, F it, and never went back on it again, claiming the relief wasn't that huge to warrant going back on it. I think he suffers from bad days between the few good from the caught hold burning pins and needles, etc., which is probably just as tiring as being on the medicine was tiring. Hard to say.
Mm-hmm. And another one. Well, and I can see that, right? I can see how being so first of all, you're putting a substance in your body that your body is now having to get used to, which does take a bit of time, right? Getting on a medication, getting off a medication. I can speak to this, getting off of SSRIs in the September. How long did it take me to get rid of those brain zaps, Brooke? A long time. Or like, just like start crying for no reason. It takes a while because the physiology, your brain and your body are trying to get used to a new normal, trying to balance themselves out. And the chemical stuff is huge. It's not like you're just eating a Skittle. It has huge side effects. So the next one reads here, my partner was on gabapentin for 8 months. He was so drowsy, has next to no recollection of those months. He was dizzy, had horrible dry mouth, didn't find it helped much with the nerve pain. We got him weaned off quick, and now he manages his nerve pain with cannabis, which, I mean, is, again, not legal everywhere, but here we are speaking of plant medicine. And I think I responded to that as well, saying, yep, cannabis and serapeptas, oh no, that's you, worked wonders for my hubby. And that's the same for Dan and I. He was sent home with, I think I even commented in this post saying that I remember it clear as day, you know, being Dan getting out of rehab and me having to drive around the city trying to fill one prescription and another prescription. And why did I have to frequent so many different pharmacies? Well, because they were out of one and they only had half of one, a quarter of another, come back on Wednesday to fill the rest, go to this pharmacy. It was a nightmare. And I remember just the shock of, first of all, you have your partner with a spinal cord injury who needs everything from you. You are their hands, feet, everything. Dan couldn't pour milk into his cereal bowl. He wasn't able to do anything. He could barely lift a fork to his mouth at that point. And I remember having to leave him while I drove around the city to fill these prescriptions and coming back, and his foot slipped underneath his foot plate in his wheelchair. He was stuck in this really, really, really hot rental unit that GF Strong gave us because we had nowhere else to go. It was so hot that the candles were melting inside their apartment. And I came home to him basically screaming for help while I drove around the city trying to fill these medications. And I remember sitting there being up all night. I was so exhausted, just up all night while he was kind of going to sleep in and out of sleep. And I couldn't sleep with these pill containers and labeling 8:30 a.m., 10:30, a.m., noon, and this dose at this time, and this, and the pill containers stacking one on top of each other, just labeling, thinking, holy shit, is this the rest of our lives? Sitting here counting pills, trying to figure out which pill goes where. Have I put too many in one container? Are they getting mixed up? What if he takes an extra dose here or there? Like, who can? There's absolutely no way that a patient would be able to self-manage this, first of all. Nowadays, you can get blister packs and the whole thing. But to think that this is now your life being completely controlled by medication, and to look at our lives now to see that he takes a very small dose of baclofen, I think once a day and not every day, to think that you can still, because the fear was, wow, he had a spinal cord injury. He almost died. He now has to have these medications to live. He will never be able to leave his bed. He'll never be able to make anything of himself if he doesn't take these pills, to see now that he doesn't really take any of those pills and he's been able to get out of bed. He's not a complete zombie. He's been able to go to school. He's been able to go to work. And these are the kind of stories that women really need to pay attention to. You need to listen that just because your partner might be hopped up on pills, lying in bed, not being able to have a quality of life, and you're there, you know, bending over backwards, waiting on them hand and foot, this doesn't have to be the rest of your life. This is something that I really, truly advocate for, is that there are other options, but it's really scary to even entertain those options when you've been told the entire time your partner has been injured that this is the only way.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. I really, really agree with that. And I think it's important for us to speak up on this because, I was going to say, when you finished talking about all the pills and stuff, and that is a way, right? That's a way. That's not the only way. Right? We are conditioned in this community to think that is the only way because your doctor said so. It's not. It's a way. right? And so this is why, like you said, it's really important talking and sharing these stories and our experiences on this, and to tell people, no, it's a choice. It is a way, but it's not the only way. And you need to inform yourself, because when you inform yourself and you hear stories that it's not the only way and that you can be free of this stuff and still live a really great, amazing life, it gives hope, and you can make better choices that way. I just wish that the system wasn't set up to shove this in your face and say, this is the way, right? I wish it was set up to say, okay, here's a way. Right. This could work for you. This is what my doctor says, but I have limited resources. So what do you think? Here's some other resources. Here, now you make a choice. What's best for you? But it's just not like that. And I kick myself all the time because of it, because I'm just like, it's so frustrating. I wish it was like that, right? That would be more patient-centric.
Yeah.
But it's not patient-centric. That's not the system. So
also, there is no cookie cutter for this kind of stuff, right? Like, no. I think that's the biggest thing, is like, you get into your physician's office. First of all, you've spent so much time trying to make an appointment. You get into the office, you spend 30 seconds saying, what is it that you want? You get your diagnosis right there. You get sent home with prescription pills. You go home. Now you yourself are administering these medications to yourself. You're not professional.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're looking for. You don't know the symptoms you're looking for. And then, oh yeah, you know, you call back, you go see your doctor again. They say, oh yeah, sometimes that happens. Just give it a little more time. Again, why is it that you yourself are now the professional? If we're going to have that argument.
Yeah.
Why is it that you yourself are able to take so much responsibility for taking something that can have such great effects on your health, which probably will send you back to the hospital? So what I guess what I'm trying to say is, I wish there was a way to work on a more preventative model as opposed to that sick care model.
Yeah.
And waiting until
that would be the dream.
You're falling apart, right? And waiting until you're falling apart before you start to seek alternative medicine. And I mean, sure. I would say I kind of gravitate between the line of alternative medicine and really digging into the pharmacy side of things, you know, big pharma and the other Western perspective. And I just want the truth. And I think that's what all of us want. We just want the truth. We just want to know what is the best way to live a healthy and happy life.
Yeah, for sure. Well, before we end this podcast, I'm going to read one more because I think it's important. It ties kind of into the next thing we'll talk about. So this one says, my husband was on gabapentin when he first got injured about 2.5 years ago. It was fine at first, managed his pain enough. Then they had to keep upping his dose. Eventually he was at max dose and he could tell it wasn't effective over time. We talked about switching, but we finally didn't have a choice but to switch because it messed with his mind so much. He was always depressed, and at the end of taking it, he was hardly even coherent. He would be in the middle of a sentence and forget what he was saying. And then he'd be more upset, depressed, because he couldn't remember what he was saying. He knew he was only forgetting more and more often, and it was only getting worse. He eventually had to go to inpatient for 2 to 3 weeks while they weaned him off gabapentin and onto Lyrica. About 2.5 years into Lyrica, and I feel like I'm starting to see some of the same signs as before. It's not as bad, but it's going to happen again. He wants off the medications, but his pain is so bad, he hasn't been able to handle weaning off yet. We hope one day he can stop taking these medications. Okay, so the reason I read this is because it's very important to understand that Lyrica is very similar to gabapentin. It's very similar mechanism, very similar side effects. Again, look into this yourself. If your partner's on Lyrica and you're concerned, or you want to know more about it, very, very similar to gabapentin. So,
right. Well, actually, we're not going to wrap it up here because the next comment is hives, dry skin, memory issues, lower leg swelling, awful. Next one. He forgets easily and gets brain fog. Next one. My husband tried it. The doctors started him on 300 and he said he felt drunk and just not like himself for about 2 days. He struggled with feelings of hopelessness and sadness. So we stopped it. He tried the lesser dose and the same thing happened. I mean, these are back to back to back. The next one became moody and he said he doesn't like taking it. I mean, my husband was on max dose when he left, weaned off totally in 6 months.
Wow. And there's a few stories like that where they're like, yeah, he stopped and weaned off. And there's a couple warnings too from other WAGs that say my husband doesn't take it, but it's very, very addictive. And so please be cautious. I mean,
actually, okay. Hold on a second here. And here is one. It really helped his nerve pain. No adverse side effects. So there is the first one in how many comments?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all here. The next one, it made him stupid. Next one, wow. It was a nightmare for us. Then the withdrawals getting off of it were an even bigger nightmare. From everyone I've spoken to, with it either works wonders or it's an absolute living hell. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really glad that we did this podcast. Before we started this podcast, we were kind of like, oh, I don't know, should we? But I think it's important to talk about the things that scare people. Like we said earlier, these are the things that we like to do. So we would definitely encourage anybody who wants more information to look this up. And we're going to be doing, I think it's important to mention some alternatives to GABA. And we're going to do another podcast about this because it's too much for one podcast. So this podcast, we've outlined gabapentin, what it is, what its side effects are, and some feedback from our community. The next one we'll do is we'll talk about some alternatives. We'll talk about some alternatives to GABA, gabapentin, which is GABA, which is a natural mechanism that comes from the earth that could not be patented by pharmaceutical companies. So they based gabapentin off GABA. And yes, you can find GABA at health food stores. So we will get into that on the next podcast. And we will also talk about different ways of managing pain that are done naturally and that you can feel good about without any side effects for people that are interested in that modality of healing chronic pain.
Yeah, 100%. So again, do your research, look into this. We are just the vessel leading you down the path of knowledge and wisdom and curiosity. All we want is for everybody listening to this podcast is to take care of themselves and please love one another.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll just see you next time.